The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I haven't thought about an epitaph yet, and I'm hoping not to have to think of one soon, but maybe I'll come up with something anyway.
It's always nice to take a line from a poem or a song. You know, there are some famous ones that people have used.
I think it needs a good thought, though. I mean, yes. It's going to be there like for a long time, you know.
So yeah, you need to kind exactly. Of well, I saw one, a woman by the name of Kay. What she did was she actually put her famous fudge recipe on her tombstone. Which I think is quite nice.
That's a legacy.
It's one way of saying, you know, we took the recipe to the grave, I suppose. But unfortunately, on social media, people actually tested it and said it wasn't even so great. That's terrible. I mean, to leave your fudge recipe on your tombstone and then it turns out it wasn't even a good recipe. Wow.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah. But another thing that I'm wondering about is whether we should be trading vaccines for peace or diplomacy, because apparently that's now the latest currency that's being used for these things. You know, we spoke about it with the Syria peace deal, we understand that vaccines were involved in the trade. And there's been further reports about Israel giving vaccines to friendly countries,
yeah,
or countries that we wish to be friendly
Incredible.
With. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is first of all saying that we're running short of vaccines, so everybody run along in order to get yourself vaccinated because we're running short of vaccines. Now they're saying we're handing surplus vaccines
to Honduras and places.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, first of all, the Palestinian Authority, which, you know, has been a subject of discussion. Why is Israel not allowing the Palestinians to be vaccinated? Well, that's absolutely not true. And there were a few thousand doses that were provided to medical teams within the Palestinian Authority. We understand that more vaccines will be provided as well as part of the so-called surplus that Israel has. But countries like Cyprus, Greece, Italy, Egypt, Spain, and as you mentioned, a plane from Honduras apparently landed here in order to take some vaccine back to Central America. So, yeah, it's a very interesting new currency that we have now in the form of vaccines. And, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu is keeping a close watch on his friend Albert Bourla at Pfizer, making sure that we continue to get a steady flow of vaccine, I guess, so we can get the diplomacy on the road, right?
Yeah, and I just want to make one distinction, and a lot of people get confused when they say that Israel wasn't sharing the vaccines with the Palestinian Authority. It is not to be confused with Israeli Arabs, because at least a third, or at least 50%, I can't recall, of Israeli Arabs have already. So Israel received the vaccine. Israel is not discriminating in terms of its citizens at all.
Correct. So all Israelis, no matter what creed, color, whatever group they come from, are entitled to be vaccinated, have been vaccinated, are being implored to be vaccinated. Asylum seekers and refugees, people even without status in Israel, are being called upon to get vaccinated at the cost of the medical health organizations. There's no cost involved at all. And I saw a statistic somewhere that said that something like, I think, 70% of Israeli adults now, people who are actually eligible to be vaccinated, have indeed already received a vaccine. And so that's a very, very high number indeed. And, you know, the question now just simply remains with the younger people, with the people, especially the under 16s, who are not within the group that is allowed to be vaccinated according to the instructions from the pharmaceutical company. So we're just waiting to hear about those clinical trials and whether the younger generation will also be able to be safely vaccinated. The whole vaccine thing is creating a new diplomacy and a new issue, a lot of new questions as well. As I've said before, I'm still waiting to see what happens when the 6 months runs out and everybody's green cards begin, you know, to get to the end of their validity period. What happens next? That's going to be a new discussion, but apparently nobody is even daring to mention it right now. We will get there when we get there, apparently.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's just talk about the government's approval of a nighttime curfew that is going to be enforced over Purim weekend. Give us a sense of why this was done.
Well, I think that the government is just really nervous about the experience that we had of Purim last year. Now, admittedly, we were much, much less aware of things this time last year. There can be no doubt about that. But of course, Purim is a natural period of people gathering together and getting drunk and behaving in a way that you would not normally behave in during the course of the year. Ad lo yada is, as the saying goes, that you're supposed to get drunk ad lo yada until you cannot distinguish between various characters in the Purim story. And so the government is clearly concerned that this may lead to gatherings of people, and this may then in turn lead to an uptick in the number of people being infected. And so what they've decided to do is to try to limit the number of people who would ordinarily get together in the evenings to celebrate Purim. And we've got a particular situation this year, a so-called Purim Mishulash, what's called a triangular Purim, because of the fact that Purim falls on Friday and that Shushan Purim, which is the day that's celebrated in Jerusalem, as opposed to the actual Purim day. Jerusalem celebrates the day of Shushan Purim, which is the day after, would fall on Saturday. So they don't have Shushan Purim on Saturday. They will rather have it on Sunday. Mm. So we have Shabbat in between, Purim on Friday, Shushan Purim on Sunday, and the so-called three-day Purim that we need to deal with. So the government has decided to implement a nighttime curfew starting at 8:30 in the evening until 6 in the morning for each evening beginning on Thursday up until Sunday. So they are trying somehow to prevent people from gathering together in those evenings to celebrate Purim, whether it be Purim itself, whether it be Shushan Purim on Sunday, to try to prevent people, Megillah readings, things like that, which inevitably attract crowds of people, they're somehow trying to prevent. Whether this will work or not, I don't know. And of course, again, you know, the vaccine program is really going to need to come into its own here. If it's worth anything, then it's going to really work well over Purim, especially for those people who have been vaccinated with at least one vaccination, because according to the scientific research, one vaccination is enough to give you a much higher number of level of antibodies, even though, of course, two vaccinations is still very much the preferred approach and the one that the pharmaceutical companies are recommending. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over Purim, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Jewish communities around the world over Purim, Howard, because, you know, again, we saw what happened last year. Purim was really disastrous in certain communities, particularly in the US and the UK as well. Many, many people were infected over the Purim holiday, and many of them as a result of that actually died, unfortunately, while we were still learning what this is all about. So hopefully lessons have been learned and that people will be a lot more cautious over Purim this year. Get dressed up, you know, hear your Megillah as best you can, do what you would like to do, and have a few drinks, but people need to be at home and not gather in crowds, because that is exactly what happened last year and how so many people were badly affected.
Absolutely right. We spoke with a doctor a little bit earlier talking about how to manage it here in South Africa. Before we move on to the next conversation, I just want to read you one message. Hillel says, I'm guilty of road rage against reckless, dangerous drivers. My wife says that she will put, he died trying to teach them a lesson on the tombstone. So,
I think there are two categories here. What you would like to see on your tombstone and what your wife would like to see on your tombstone.
Absolutely right. And they might be vastly different. You might be shocked to hear that it's not one and the same message. All right. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken yesterday called Israeli Foreign Minister Gabi Ashkenazi. What did he call him?
Well, Gabi, I hope. That's what people usually call him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's a strange sort of conversation. I mean, this is just an engaging of the new U.S. administration with the Israeli government. I think, you know, to call it a courtesy call, I think would give it the courtesy that it needs, because this government is on its way out, although obviously it will continue to operate in the period after the election until a new government is formed. I think we need to just bear that in mind.
Assuming it is.
Exactly. This government will continue to operate at least until a new coalition government is formed, whenever that might be. And even though Gabi Ashkenazi is supposedly in the so-called weak period of the government as we go into the election period, and he doesn't really have much power in terms of what he's able to do, because there is this notion that the new government should and will really pick up the new policies and will deal with the new administration. So this was really a courtesy call in every respect, but I think it's a call that probably needed to be made after President Biden did call Prime Minister Netanyahu last week. Apparently, they discussed, again, the U.S.'s support for Israel, which is an ongoing theme that we see in these courtesy call discussions. But it was interesting that Antony Blinken did emphasize the Biden administration's belief that the two-state solution is the best way to ensure Israel's future as a Jewish and democratic state living in peace alongside a viable and democratic Palestinian state. Now, you know, that concept, of course, is not new, the so-called two-state solution. It is, in effect, pretty much what we have now. And people fail to recognize that in the main part. I mean, we could argue that we have a three-state solution right now. The state of Gaza, which is being ruled by Hamas, the state of the Palestinian Authority, if you like, which is being ruled by a Hamas, by a Fatah-led government, and of course Israel. And each of those three areas have their own independent governing authority. And Israel, while having some influence over certain aspects of the Palestinian Authority, doesn't have responsibility for the day-to-day government of the Palestinian Authority and the people who live there. So I think it's important for us to already recognize that that's what we have. Of course, it's not formalized. The Palestinian Authority is not a country amongst the nations and a member, full member of the United Nations as they would wish to be. But in essence, the current status quo is very, very similar, if not almost the same, as what would be with the two-state solution, except that the Palestinians would agree to certain compromises and Israel and the Palestinians would sign some sort of an agreement, and then they would be allowed to continue to pretty much do what they've been doing up until now. Of course, the main sticking block is the status of Jerusalem, which for now at least the Palestinian Authority have no rights to. And that is the way that Israel would like to see it going forward. They have other ideas, and that is one of the reasons why the Palestinian Authority refuses to enter into a longer-term arrangement with Israel, because they feel that they don't want to formally give up on their rights to Jerusalem. So that was really the discussion between Antony Blinken and Gabi Ashkenazi. I don't think that Gabi Ashkenazi has been very influential in his role as foreign minister. He's very much been under the influence control, if you like, of Prime Minister Netanyahu. So I don't think he'll go down in history as being one of Israel's greatest foreign ministers, having done very much during his term in office. And it's very, very unlikely when, if and when a new government eventually gets formed, that Gabi Ashkenazi will be foreign minister. But of course, Antony Blinken made a very nice statement, which he said it was great speaking with Gabi Ashkenazi today to discuss our partnership, regional challenges, and Israel's efforts to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. The United States remains unwavering in its commitment to Israel's security. Antony Blinken. Yeah, I think that's a nice, I mean, of course, it's very nice to raise this issue of how Israel is dealing with COVID-19, because at the moment, at least for now, Israel is being touted as a great example from the vaccination program. So it's a little bit of a compliment that can be sprinkled amongst what is otherwise a very generic statement. Yeah, exactly, at least for now. Apparently, Defense Minister Benny Gantz and National Security Advisor Meir Ben Shabbat were involved in a meeting that the Prime Minister called to talk about what's happening with Iran. Of course, the issue of Iran is very much on the agenda between the US and Israel at the moment, but it doesn't seem as if though very much was discussed in that conversation.
I would have thought that would have been a significant part of the focus.
Yeah, well, at least there was no public acknowledgement of that. I'm not quite sure if there was an attempt just to try to deflect attention away from any discussion on Iran, or whether it just wasn't raised at that level, and whether this is something that's really being discussed directly between Netanyahu and Biden, not clear to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating, because we never really do know what goes on in these conversations, whether it gets, whether we like it or not. We can only speculate. Anthony Reich, this is unfortunately where we leave it. I did want to chat to you about Teslas arriving in Israel, but we can hold that for tomorrow.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.